At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Luke Guerrero stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and today is Tuesday, July 23rd, 2024, and I'm very excited to be here with you on this Tuesday. You know, I'm not usually here with you on Tuesdays, and full disclosure, I'm actually going to be here with you every day for the rest of the week. And each day, we're going to meet and talk about what you want to talk about, but I don't know what that is. So how, you might ask, am I going to tell Luke what I want to talk about? Well, hopefully you call us live over the next hour. If you don't want to talk to me live, I get it. People tell me they don't like to talk to me live from time to time, so leave me a voicemail. Or maybe go over to our YouTube channel. Leave a comment. Either way, I want to hear from you. Now, with that being said, we'll talk about the market performance in a little bit, as well as run down our show topics for today. But why don't we get to our first caller question now?
Hi, this is Andrew from Buffalo. Just calling to get your take on stock McDonald's. I've had it on my watch list for a little while now, and it's come down to a point where I feel like it's a good entry point. Would like to get your thoughts and comments on that. Thanks. I'll be listening on the show.
So McDonald's is certainly a household name, really the inventor of fast food. And it's an $187 billion market cap company that's been in a little bit of a slump lately. And the reason for that, the reason why it's dropped off from, you know, around $300 a share all the way down to $254 where it sits today, is because their profit margins are slipping. The revenue growth is slipping. And last quarter, they had some pretty poor projections for how the year was going to go. I mean, think about, you know, this isn't the only company that's suffering through this. Starbucks, another company that had pretty dismal projected revenue growth and projected earnings for 2024. So this is nothing that we don't expect. With that being said, the business as a whole is a great business model. It has always been a great business model. And that's because they pass on most of the financial capital risk to their franchisees. McDonald's doesn't directly operate these stores. They franchise them. And so with that being said, I think a lot of the problems that have really been brought to the forefront here in terms of their guidance for this year has been a result of decreasing demand and pinching pocketbooks. And so going forward beyond 2024, you know, I think they expect to have 50,000 stores worldwide by 2027 is their goal. So there are some pretty ambitious growth goals for this company. And even with demand being down, cash flow is still improving. Profitability is still up from what it was a couple years ago. Their debt picture is not too bad. $53 billion on a $187 billion market cap company is nothing bad at all. Earnings have recently actually been upgraded despite those gloomy forward-looking guidance from last quarter. They brought back shares consistently over the past 5 years. They pay a nice dividend, 2.57%, very consistent dividend, and the payout ratio is only about 53%. So they can certainly afford it. So for me, I think personally, given that this company is down 14% over the past year, given that it's down 14% year to date, it may be approaching a buy point. If you can stomach short-term volatility for the rest of this year and hold on to it long-term towards that, what could be pretty profitable growth and expansion plan into 2027, I think you could see some pretty solid returns. Now, going back before 2020, they underperformed their industry. In 2021, 2022, 2023, they actually outperformed their industry. This year, they're certainly well behind. But again, if you can stomach shorter-term volatility, I think McDonald's is a good company to hold, but keep in mind that they probably won't recover much before the end of this year. And certainly also keep in mind that earnings is projected to be released on July 29th. So I would wait till the end of that just to see what their updated guidance is. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And here's some of what I have planned for you, time permitting. My main focus point concerns this story. Retirement plan changes, what the IRS update means for you. The IRS has issued new guidance on early distributions from retirement plans, providing clarity on exceptions to the 10% additional tax for unforeseeable or emergency personal or family expenses, and for survivors of domestic abuse. Understanding these key points of this updated guidance is crucial to ensure it aligns with your retirement goals and minimizes potential penalties. We'll also talk a little bit about the SEC approving an Ethereum ETF. What does that mean for the industry? What does that mean for cryptocurrency? What does that mean for you? We'll also talk about the UN and its recent attacks on corporate carbon credits. For those of you who don't know, there is a broad and vast corporate carbon credit market that a lot of companies actually make some good money off of. I know that's about 50% of Tesla's profits this year came from, or this quarter came from carbon credits. So what does the UN have to say? And what does that mean for industries moving forward? And should we have time at the end of the show, we're going to talk about an interesting story related to companies that decide to speak out about politics. What is best for investors with respect to how companies respond to politically charged topics? We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, one on utility companies and one on Apple. That's ticker AAPL. And we also have some questions that came in from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're moving into a break. And on the other side, we'll take a look at today's market activity. That's coming up next, but feel free to call at 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk.
Invest Talk.
If you're okay with that risk.
With host and financial advisor, Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
This company is falling like a rock. It's down 52%.
Invest Talk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
Invest Talk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Sid in North Carolina, who has a question about UNH. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I do have a small position, probably less than 0.5% of my portfolio, Luke. And first of all, thanks for taking my call. I do have a like kind of a 20-25% of profit at this point, but looking at the rate cut around the corner and this being the healthcare company, do you see a problem down the road? Should I sell it off or I can keep it for a long term? Just wanted to hear your opinion. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. And thanks for calling in. So United Healthcare Group is an incredibly large healthcare company. It's a $521 billion market cap company. They have very little debt relative to their market cap, only $67 billion, so nothing much to worry there. Their earnings have been improving over the past 5 years pretty consistently. They've been buying back shares. Their cash flow has been looking better. Their profitability has been looking better. And really, they've just had some pretty significant growth. Within the healthcare industry, I think this tends to be a company that I would prefer relative to other insurers. And so, you know, I think your inclination to lean towards how will interest rates affect this company is certainly something that you should consider. For me, and I've said this on a couple other shows as well, when people call about healthcare companies, I think that I'm more worried about the short-term effects, or really the medium-term effects, of the outcome of the election. I think that the healthcare industry is one that it sits on a significant amount of regulation, and certainly the differing political parties and different candidates have different ideas about where healthcare should move going forward. I know that going back the past, 10 years, one of the goals of the Republican Party has been to repeal the Affordable Care Act. So should they have a sweeping victory, that certainly is something that's on the table. So for me, I think there's a lot of regulatory risk for healthcare companies, certainly for the next six months to a year. And so I'm hesitant to, overweight healthcare companies at this point. I think a lot of them are pretty fairly valued as well. So for me, if you were up by 25%, I would probably start to take a little bit of profit. I don't think you need to sell it off completely. Like you said, it's a pretty small part of your portfolio, but I would hedge my bets here and take some of the profit that I've made off of this name. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Mark from San Diego, who has a question about PM.
Yes, I had it sold out at 90 at profit. Of course, it's run up since then, wondering if I should get back in or if it's too late.
Yeah, well, the question is an interesting one. I think I have hesitated to, be heavily invested in this area of the market, Philip Morris being, the very large tobacco company. But I think, we held for a while going back, maybe last year we sold off of British American Tobacco for our clients. But I think one of the benefits of Philip Morris is it has a pretty heavy exposure to smoke-free tobacco, right? Their smoke-free products are now making up about 26% of their revenue, which is pretty significant and certainly an area, I think, of growth moving forward. I think maybe 10 years ago or so, 5-10 years ago, no, I think it was 5 years ago, there was a lot of move towards banning some of these smoke-free products, and that's kind of receded a little bit. Now, the question becomes, is it currently, does it have some room to run? It's trading at a forward-looking P of 16. It's trading at forward-looking cash flows of 16 as well. I think, frankly, it's a little bit too expensive right now. It's at about where its consensus target is of 113. I would wait for it to come down a little bit. It's up 2% today. Just had earnings released at the close. I didn't have an opportunity to take a look at earnings in depth for this name specifically. It did beat a little bit, so maybe it'll open up a little bit as well tomorrow. But for me, I would stay away right now. It looks a little too rich for my blood, especially given the line of business it's in and given where its multiples have been over the past 5 years. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk about the market today. U.S. stocks finished mostly lower, ending near their worst levels. Big tech was mostly higher after leading the market on Monday as well. Other outperformers included MedTech. Looks like hospitals did well. Laggards included parcel logistics, UPS being one that did particularly poorly today. Truck manufacturers also doing poorly. Energy semis doing poorly as well. Gold finished up 0.5%. Bitcoin futures down 4%. Interestingly enough, on the back of the first day of trading of the Ethereum ETFs, crude oil down almost 2%, hitting its lowest levels since mid-June, midway through the day. Overall, it remained quiet on the macro front ahead of core PCE inflation, which comes out Friday, as well as the Fed meeting next week, where they're expected to hold interest rates steady, but certainly could signal that September may be the time where it starts to cut rates. There was also a notable pickup in earnings this week, though takeaways were kind of mixed, and there's still a lot of debate about whether recent rotations out of momentum, growth, tech, and into small caps and those cyclical names, those value names as well, will continue. But some thoughts, a good chunk of the move has already been taken place, and earnings flagged is the next key input with big tech results in focus. Google and Tesla reported at the end of the day today. I know Google missed on YouTube revenue. Tesla did particularly poorly in terms of its profits. I think around a 7% margin. So it'll be interesting to see what the markets think tomorrow when they open up. Existing home sales on the macro front came in well below consensus. The median price is hitting another all-time high. Richmond Fed manufacturing for July also hit the lowest mark since May of 2020, with shipments, new orders, and employments all moving down. Flash PMIs and new home sales will hit on Wednesday, while Thursday brings the first look at Q2 GDP, as well as initial claims and durable good orders. But really the highlight, I already mentioned it, PCE inflation on Friday. The street looking for core PCE inflation to increase 10 basis points in June, for the second straight month, pushing the three-month annualized rate below the Fed's 2% target. Now, this is InvestTalk, now with over, wait for it, over 59 million downloads. And that is all thanks to you. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here, and that's to help you achieve your financial freedom. But I can't do that without your help. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is about retirement plan changes and what the IRS update means for you. So the Internal Revenue Code, Section 72T1, typically imposes a 10% additional tax on early withdrawals from retirement accounts before age 59 and a half, but there are some exceptions. The Secure Act 2.0, or the Secure 2.0 Act, rather, which is effective this year, introduces two new exceptions designed to provide financial relief under specific distressing circumstances without that additional tax burden. Now, the first of these is for emergency personal expenses. This new exception allows for a penalty-free withdrawal to address unforeseeable or immediate financial needs due to personal or family emergencies. Now, eligibility for this withdrawal is limited to once per calendar year and does have some dollar limits. And plan administrators can really rely on an employee's certification regarding the emergency need, which can include a wide range of personal crises, from medical and funeral expenses to major necessary repairs or even imminent foreclosure. If the plan does not specifically allow for these distributions, employees can still treat it as a permissible withdrawal as an emergency personal expense distribution. Now, these distributions can be repaid within 3 years, similar to other qualified distribution repayments like those for births or adoptions, with additional restrictions on further emergency distributions within that period. That's the first one. The second one is for domestic abuse victims. Now, this exception supports individuals who are victims of domestic abuse by a spouse or partner, allowing for withdrawal within 1 year from the onset of abuse. Withdrawals can be up to the lesser of $10,000 or 50% of the vested benefits. The definition of abuse includes physical abuse, psychological, sexual, emotional, or economic harm, extending to actions that even attempt to control or isolate the victim. Victims can repay the withdrawn amount within 3 years, and plan administrators may accept an employee's certification for the withdrawal's purpose. As with emergency personal expense distributions, these are not eligible for rollover and are exempt from the usual 20% withholding. Overall, these changes aim to make retirement savings more accessible in dire situations, potentially encouraging more robust participation in retirement planning with the knowledge that funds can still be accessed during emergencies. The flexibility could be particularly reassuring for those hesitant to lock away funds until retirement, uncertain about what the future may bring. Now let's shift gears and go back to another question from the InvestTalk Voice Bank.
Skip. Hi, Justin, I'm calling today about some utility companies. I heard that when interest rates start getting lower, people start moving their money to more defensive stocks and cyclical stocks and maybe something like utility companies because of the dividend. I was wondering if you could take a look at AES. I had an investment in this and I couldn't find any news, but last week it was down almost 10%, whereas something like Duke or the Southern Company, ticker symbol SO, has been hitting all-time highs and doing really well. I was wondering if you could break that down for me and just give me some insight on the utility companies and the money moving into them and why it's not moving into AES. Do you think I should move it over? Thank you very much. Appreciate everything you guys do. Have a good day.
Okay, so let's answer this question in two parts. The first is, investors tend to shift money towards utility companies when interest rates are falling. And that can be true. I think it matters why interest rates are falling. So utilities tend to be defensive names. If interest rates are falling because the Fed's hands have been forced, because there's an economic issue, because there's a market-wide issue, then people will tend to shift towards those defensive names. And even in times when interest rates are falling, they still, for other reasons, they may still shift to utilities. And that's because utilities tend to offer attractive dividends. They're not really growing companies. A lot of them are highly regulated. And they're very expensive to run. They're very costly to run. And so when interest rates are falling, debt financing becomes cheaper, profit margins can expand, so people may be shifting towards utilities. And there has been a little bit of this in the sector rotation. Now, the second part of the question is AES Corp. Why isn't AES Corp benefiting from this? They're down 21% on the week. They're really up 2% in the 3 month and down 8% year to date. And the reason why AES Corporation is not benefiting from this is because they have a lot of debt. They're a $12 billion company with $27 billion in debt. And that debt's grown. In 2019, it was only $20 billion. And they paid it down a little bit in 2021, but then that's expanded. $24 billion in 2022, $27 billion this year. And so for me, this goes back to one of our original lessons here, which is companies cannot do well in terms of economic crises or economic fluctuation if the burden of debt is too much. And this seems to me like a case of the burden of debt being too much. So if you want to get invested in utility names, I would pick another one. I think AES has far too much debt. Thanks for the call. Justin and I are thankful for your podcast support, and our free downloads will continue, but I want to make sure you are aware of two other ways to find our material and unbiased guidance. One is the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and the other is by following us on Instagram. We're building out more content on both platforms, so go to YouTube or Instagram and search InvestTalk. Remember, use two T's. That is InvestTalk with two T's. That being said, our phone lines are open. Feel free to call at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
I would really appreciate if you could give me an entry point for a company called Medtronic, MDT.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART, or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to take on your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Just giving a quick call about Apple, the stock, AAPL. I know everybody knows about it, but it's going on hyperbolic drive. And I just want to have someone at least educate me about when to sell. You know, I know that like you want to ride the wave. It passed all moving day averages and it's still going higher and higher. It just had a pullback about 2%. So, you know, if there was anything, any clues that you could tell me about like when to take profits and when to like ride the wave. Looking forward to the end on the podcast. Thank you very much. It's about 14% of my portfolio. That's another reason why I want to trim it. Thank you very much. Bye.
So I don't have to tell anybody what Apple is. Apple is a massive company, $3.4 trillion as of today. And we own it for our clients. We have trimmed a little bit of it in this run. But certainly we still think there's room for Apple to grow long-term. Remember, we are long-term investors. We're not trying to do short-term trades here for our clients. We are long-term investors. And Apple has been a consistent grower, 8% over the past 5 years. Their cash flow has expanded. Their profit margins still look very, very solid. Projected to be 26% this year. I mean, these margins are incredible. And so, you know, I would say in the short to medium term, I am looking to see if the numbers bear out towards the end of this year based on what Apple expects their new quote-unquote AI-enhanced iPhone that's going to be coming out towards the end of this year to do. You know, Apple has consistently beat in terms of people purchasing new iPhones, whether or not they need them, be it that they're locked into the iPhone upgrade program or that they just want the new iPhone year after year. So it's going to be interesting to see that as consumer spending has tamped down just a little bit, retail sales falling just a little bit, if people are still able to buy iPhones. And so that's something that I have my eye on. Now, that being said, it's 14% of your portfolio. You should trim that. That is a wild amount. And certainly it's done very well for you. But remember, investing is about returns, but it's also about risks. So I would certainly start to trim that into this run up here. You have earnings coming August 1st. That can be a risky play there. You could see a big drop off. You could see a big rise. You could see absolutely nothing happening. There's a lot of volatility around earnings. I tend to not like to trade around earnings, but this is an extenuating circumstance here because 14% seems like a lot. It is a lot of your portfolio. I would trim that down probably to 5-6%. I mean, that's a very, very big part of your portfolio. A lot of risk to take on. Either way, we're still holding on for our clients, but we have been trimming profits here as we've seen this stock continue to rise. Thanks for the call. Speaking of things that tend to have a lot of volatility, I think that's a good segue. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, has approved the first spot Ethereum ETF, making a significant advancement for cryptocurrency integration into mainstream U.S. finance. This follows the earlier launch of Bitcoin ETF, setting a precedent for further acceptance of cryptocurrencies in traditional financial markets and also traditional investor portfolios. These newly approved Ethereum ETFs began trading this morning following the approval of Ether Future ETFs last year. Ether, the native cryptocurrency of the Ethereum blockchain, has seen a price increase of about 1% after trading commenced and an overall increase of over 47% since the beginning of the year. The launch includes a major conversion of a $9.3 billion Grayscale Investments Trust into an ETF, alongside new offerings from established financial giants like BlackRock and Fidelity, and really indicate a growing recognition and acceptance of crypto as a viable asset class within the traditional investment management sector. CBOE Global Markets, which lists five of the ETFs, reported smooth trading and active participation from market makers from the outset. Now, in terms of fees, most of the Ethereum ETFs have kept expenses below 25 basis points. Some issuers initially waiving fees entirely. Grayscale has actually chosen to maintain a 2.5% management fee for its converted ETF, though its mini version that it launched has a lower fee of around 15 basis points post-waiver. And so I think this is an important thing to consider here because anytime these products are launched, I think people assume there is a implicit approval by the SEC in terms of it being a safe investment. But it's not. It's not any safer for you today than it was last week or last year. These are incredibly volatile assets. And just because you can go on your phone and put it in your portfolio doesn't mean you should. If you're somebody nearing retirement, this is not the type of thing that is for you. If you're somebody that has a longer time horizon and can take on that active risk, maybe then it is something that you should consider putting in your portfolio. But regardless, I think it's important to consider and always keep in mind when you're making investments, what are the risks? What are the potential returns? Yes, but if you don't fundamentally understand what you own, then it probably has no place in your portfolio. Now, as I already mentioned earlier, our InvestTalk podcast is also available in video form. You can take a look at what we look at all throughout the show, or at least one of my screens. I got a lot of screens going on here, and I can't share them all, but we certainly share the most important one. So if you're interested in what we see, please come over to our InvestTalk channel and maybe even leave a question in the comment section. Let's answer one that came in last week right now. This one is on the S&P 500, and it says, "Hello, I often see the investment space content give examples like, if you invested $20 a day in the S&P 500 for this many years, you would be a millionaire, etc." I don't think anyone said that's an exaggeration. $20 a day to a millionaire, that's wild. Regardless, how does someone invest in S&P 500? Is that an advisable strategy for a young person with a long outlook? So the S&P 500 is an index, and a lot of indices, have ETFs that track them. So if you're interested in investing in the S&P 500, certainly doing it through an ETF is the way you would want to do it. I won't mention any specific tickers because I don't want to make it seem like I advise one S&P 500 ETF over another. But regardless, if you're ever interested in investing in an index, the way you do it in the market is through an exchange-traded fund that tracks that index. Now, is it something that is an advisable strategy for a young person with a long outlook? I would say it's more advisable for a young person than it is somebody in a more mature phase of their life. And that is because it is increasingly becoming focused in a couple names. Now, those names have, over the past 2 years, driven most of the market return. But just because over the past 2 years that's been the case, does that mean it's going to be the case moving forward? One of the most commonly used phrases in any prospectus is that past performance is not a guarantee of future results. So for me, having the S&P 500 make up the entirety of your portfolio today seems like a pretty risky proposition. Thanks for the comment. Now in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story behind this headline, "The AI Data Crisis, Tech Giants Scramble for Solutions." Major companies are facing a critical shortage of training data as websites restrict access and high-quality sources become scarce. This emerging crisis is impacting industry leaders like OpenAI and Google, who are exploring solutions such as a $1 million deal with publishers and the generation of synthetic data. The shortage of training data could significantly reshape the AI landscape by 2026, raising questions about the future of AI development and the ethical use of data. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, longtime listener to your show here, Matt from Minneapolis. I have a question here that I've been pondering for a little bit. I currently own NVIDIA, owned it for over a year, made good money, have taken profits along the way, but it still is 8 to 10% of my portfolio. I've been looking at possibly purchasing TSM. Yes, I know that is in the same industry, and I don't want to double up, but I've heard, and maybe I have been misinformed, that TSM makes parts that are needed for semiconductors, so it helps us supply NVIDIA and other semiconductors, and that's what keeps it going so great. Is this false news, or is TSM a good buy right now? I guess if I don't look at TSM, another avenue I've been looking down possibly is GLD. Yes, I know it's in a different area, but I notice that has been doing good. And would that also be doing better with a possible Trump presidency? I look forward to listening to your answers on the show. Please have a great day.
A lot to unpack there, I would say. First and foremost, yes, NVIDIA and Taiwan Semiconductor are in the same sector, but that doesn't necessarily mean just because something is in the same sector that it does the same thing. And so you are correct that Taiwan Semiconductor's value proposition here is that it's a manufacturer of parts that NVIDIA then uses, it's part of NVIDIA's supply chain, to create those chips and then send those end products to NVIDIA's customers. So same area, kind of different business proposition here. I think, frankly, that unless the technology is made to, or rather, let me take a step back. I think the moat that Taiwan Semiconductor has is actually a little bit stronger than NVIDIA has. NVIDIA's value proposition here is that nobody has been able to make as efficient chips that you can optimize using the CUDA code that NVIDIA has. Now, that doesn't mean that won't be the case going forward. It's just, it's the case now. But I think Taiwan Semiconductor here has more of a moat because of its key needs, or that it is a key need along that supply chain. Now, with that being said, it had a little bit of a stumble this week on the back of comments from former President Trump regarding whether or not he would maintain protection of Taiwan, which is the seat of the semiconductor industry. And so with that being said, you know, I think the core of this here is that you hold 10% NVIDIA. You've been selling along the way, which is great. You made some money. You've been trimming profits. Fantastic. And so if you want to diversify away from the concentrated risk, then what you're going to want to do is put it in an area of the market that isn't where NVIDIA is, right? There's going to be a lot of correlation between Taiwan Semiconductor's price appreciation or price movements and NVIDIA. So, you know, that being said, if you're looking to diversify, I would move outside of the semiconductor space here into GLD. What's driving GLD and what's driving gold is completely different from what's driving NVIDIA and driving Taiwan Semiconductor here. That's what you want. You want things that are not correlated, assets that are not correlated to make up your portfolio. That's what diversification is. So if you're looking to trim down on NVIDIA, I would reach outside the semiconductor space. It may be GLD, may not be GLD, but either way, I would reach outside to a different area of the market. Thanks for the call. Let's shift back to another YouTube question that came in earlier. This one on CELH. It says, I have a question in regards to Celsius, ticker CELH. I currently own a small position in the company. It does have a fairly hefty valuation and it appears to be trading around 50 to 55 times earnings. It's falling from its highs which rightfully so with some of the news their sales have slowed domestically. However, what is your overall opinion of the company? They're just starting to expand more internationally and they are still growing well in the US. Pepsi is and appears to continue to be their main distributor and they're invested in them as well. Is this stock overpriced or is this a similar short-term downswing Monster had back in 2011, 2012? And there is plenty of long-term future room to grow. So Celsius Holdings is one of those names that has done really well in certain years. 2020, the return was 941%. I think they were up at 200% on a rolling one-year average at some point before this recent downturn in their stock price. And that's because they had some pretty robust growth from really all through the past 5 years. Annual growth is 90%, but that's really tapered off 23 into 24. They had $1.3 billion in revenue last year. They're projected to have $1.6 billion in revenue this year. And all that has made this beverage company trade at a forward-looking multiple of 38 times. That's tech multiple levels right there. Price to cash flow, 40 times. This is still too expensive for me. And the reason why this is too expensive, even though it's still down 40 to 50% from its all-time high, is because the energy drink company does not have a moat. Right? The best businesses have economic moats in that it is difficult for somebody to come in and do what they do either better or cheaper. But just because somebody likes Celsius energy drinks today doesn't mean that some other product is going to come in tomorrow, which is generally easy to manufacture, and blow them out of the water and take a bunch of their market share. And that's what you've been seeing over the past year. And that's evidenced in not only their guidance, but their earnings, is that their market share is waning. So would I buy Celsius at 40 times earnings or 40 times cash flow? No, I would not. Thanks for the comment. Let's get to another voicemail before we head into the break.
Hello, gentlemen. I wanted your thoughts on a stock I've had on my watch list for quite some time. It's Victor, Valvoline. Thank you for your thoughts.
Victor is Valvoline. And Valvoline is a company that produces, manufactures, distributes engine and automotive maintenance products. Engine oil is one of the things that they mainly produce and sell. And so that actually makes up 74% of their revenue. Non-oil makes about 21% of their revenue. And so I'm going to give this one a quick one because we're about to head into the break. And I would say that where this is trading at now, 24 times earnings, with revenue falling significantly from 2018. They still haven't gotten back to 2018 in nominal terms. Even though it's on the rise in terms of its revenue growth, it's still not quite there for me. Their cash flow doesn't look that great compared to previous years. It's been pretty flat for 3 years. I think there's better areas to put your money. Thanks for the call. Now we're heading into a break, and we're happy to play your recorded voice bank questions, or better yet, hear from you live. Our number never changes. It's been the same for quite some time. You know it. I love it. It's 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk now with 59 million downloads. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I'm calling about a sector that I don't normally invest in. After listening to Invest Talk for about 5 years, I put the airline industry and the car manufacturing industry in kind of like a do not buy sector. However, I was hoping you can take a look at GM, General Motors, for me. I think these numbers look pretty good. I was wondering if you think there's any value here in buying this company for maybe midterm, you know, just to hold for a little bit. But also, do you think this is a value trap? Maybe it's not worth it. If you can take a look at the numbers for me, please, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. As always, have a good day. Bye.
So General Motors, ticker GM, they just recently announced earnings. Their earnings per share was $3.06 compared to the consensus estimate of $2.7. It's 13% beat. Their sales, $47 billion compared to $45. That's a 5.6% beat. And in spite of all of that, they're down 6.5% today. And the reason they're down 6.5% today is because their outlook for the rest of the year does not look great. Now, like many other car companies, they've shifted away from when they said, we're going to become an all-electric vehicle company by 2030. And that's not to say that I don't think that electric vehicles will be a part of the future. I just think that completely shifting a company, especially a car company, towards something that it's never done before as quickly as possible is probably not a recipe for profits. And so they stepped back from that a little bit. But in spite of all of this, they have some pretty poor outlook for the rest of the year. That's why the stock price is down today. Now, I know I've said this a bunch of times. I know Justin says it too. And Elon Musk said it best. The natural state of a car company is dead. And so this company is $122 billion in debt, though most of that is pushed out. And because of that, their interest coverage ratio is 10 times. So they certainly can pay their earnings, pay the interest on their debt and have a lot of room to run. But I mean, for a $56 billion company to have 5% short interest out there, I just think that there are better areas of the market to get into that are less risky, that won't have shrinking margins going forward, and that didn't just provide a pretty bad outlook for the rest of the year. So GM, a storied company for sure, but certainly something that, given the business that it's in, I would just pass on. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off for the day, I wanted to touch on an interesting story that I saw, and that's probably because of the conclusion it draws. And so from the Me Too movement to the conflict in Gaza, many businesses have found themselves compelled to voice their positions on politically charged issues, maybe even due to pressures from consumers or employees themselves. However, this can be a double-edged sword. Voicing a stance can alienate consumers who disagree, potentially leading to backlash and boycotts. And as a result, some companies have attempted to adopt an ambivalent position in hopes of offending fewer people. So how has that panned out for them? Well, research by Steve Philip Muller, Durso, and Wegner suggests that actually ambivalence is the least effective thing you can do. Their studies indicate that individuals who express concerns, who express ambivalent views on politically charged issues like COVID-19, mask mandates, or U.S. immigration policy are generally liked less and respected less, regardless of whether they align with their audience's views. Ambivalent stances from these companies fail to gain respect from those who disagree and can even reduce respect among those who agree, as they may be seen as lacking commitment. This finding poses a challenge for businesses trying to navigate political expression. Harvard University has chosen to refrain from commenting on any political issues that do not relate to its core mission to avoid controversy. Yet, not all companies feel that silence is an option, as stakeholders often express them to take a stand. Therefore, interestingly enough, research suggests that if a business must address contentious political issues, it should just pick a lane. It should just pick something because they are less likely to anger all sides. Personally, I think that it's better to invest in companies that tend to stay away from these contentious political issues and not anger a base of their customers. But interesting to know that the research shows playing both sides is apparently not the answer. Now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and don't forget while you're there to rate and review us. I hope you've heard that the Invest Talk podcast is also available in video form on our Invest Talk YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.